I want to share with you some two fairly robust, I'd say even gold standard, teaching methods or learning algorithms. You'll understand it a bit more, that you can take away with you and apply right away. Of course, there's a deeper discussion I have tacked on to the end of this about the actual, comparative academic quality of concepts floating around in the space of education. And you're really basically, we're talking about something completely different from what you'd find in medicine or engineering, where you have to have people's lives at risks. In both cases, you know, you could kill someone on the operating theatre, or a plane could drop out of the sky if you had a wing material which wasn't proven in the lab, for instance. That sort of hard-nosed quality which we need in our technological society is not necessarily seen when you dig deep. So we're not actually going to dig deep. We're going to pick out some of the two, I think, best, simple, easy-to-apply, gold-standard teaching methods or algorithms. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. In this case, I'm covering teaching methods, and as promised, you'll get some easy teaching algorithms. When I call them algorithms, they're methodologies, and the idea of methodology is that it's a consistent method or framework or network that people apply or can apply and know what's going on. So anything you do in the classroom has a overhead, a learning structural management overhead to get people to do the right things and to cue. So once you do one thing in one way, it's good to have it as a generic idea. Listen up and we'll talk through it with the proviso that at the end I'm going to have a little bit of a comment, if I can remember, about the actual efficacy of education methodology in general, education algorithms or frameworks as handed down. The reason I have this, I feel there's an ethical obligation to advise you that the fact that this is high quality, it's not necessarily means that the actual implementation of things further down the track meet the actual requirement that we would expect in engineering or medicine. Basically, it's very much like Victorian medicine, where a doctor goes out and practices, has a few patients die, a few patients survive, and therefore culls their effect, and then they use their social position to actually promote their particular brand of medicine. So really, education's back in that era rather than the big science, evidence-based methodology where you do a full literature review and actually do a critical evaluation of what you do, and things like double-blind tests you wouldn't and I will read later on from texts where they report the results from their own class having actually used their technique without any further data. But let's get back into it. The two things that I want to do, and they're similar, I put them together because they've got three word catch phrases and they actually link together. One is called think, pair, share. And that's when you come across a proposition in class, you provide time to do the following things as individuals in the class. They think about their answer to a particular proposition. And then there's just a pair one-on-one discussion. So they talk with the person next to each other, and this gives some sort of averaging of the ideas. They decide who will actually communicate it, they discuss how it will be communicated, what they think, a balanced view. And so when you have a question about what is the economic importance of insects, for instance, or should we use spray on insects? and there's a whole series of things, whole variety of things, by letting people think their individual stuff. They then filter that with the next person. You get some sort of equalization and helping them. They then, so they think probably the best to jot down some ideas. I should write about the Australian Standard lab book or notebook. I'll do that later. But they write down some, they can jot down some notes, pair, discuss for a period of time, and then at the end you get various people to actually share with the class their view, and obviously you have to comment, correct, grade, and give some feedback at this stage. So that's a fairly standard type of approach. And so if you say, look, such a question, think, pair, share, after they've been practiced a number of times, they will actually produce a product. And because you're getting people to ask at the end, you can actually inquire, and you still have to use your standard questioning technique, but this allows a bit more processing time from just asking a question, a direct questioning, and you can direct beyond there. So this idea in that there's a questioning technique, which I'll eventually get back and give a podcast comparing the basically there's a military questioning technique which is just gold standard, and I use it all the time. That's, it really is the best questioning technique. But to actually move forward, as giving a period of time, and where this is a student, the student level is produced by this, so it's not guided questioning. So repeat that one. A three word thing is think, pair, share. And I promised a second one, which is a predict, observe, explain. So obviously, you can have a think, pair, share to generate predictions. So the first one can go into the second one. So this is the fundamental aspect of observation. There is obviously these random observations where you're clued to look around or trained to look for indications. So a trained person, a person who's had their car break down before, will look for oil underneath the car or steam from the bonnet that they'll be clued to observe. But in this case, you direct the class is directed to make a prediction about a situation, about what they think will happen. They should obviously write or note down what they think will happen, so that you can gather a group of predictions. It is actually interesting to write down a prediction and inquire and write down three or four different predictions, and then get a poll classing. That is, if you've got four predictions, people vote for the various predictions, and then you conduct the experiment or reveal the data. They observe it, and then using that, they have to explain the observation. Now, of course, they can realise that some of their predictions are wrong, some of the predictions are right, and trying to get the science behind it. So they're and that's a really good way of science thinking. It doesn't get you in any of these. It doesn't get you into the abstract levels. There's sort of another layer of taxonomy to get them to think. This is again going into the golden store of quality Australian teaching. This is whether they observe one, or a unimodal thing, they observe one thing, they observe multiple things, and if they observe multiple features, and whether they can relate those multiple features to an outcome. So this basically forces people up into that higher level. I'm referring to the structured observation of learning outcomes, whether you can infuse in this the use of abstract scientific terms. So one aspect of science education is supply the abstract concepts to include in their processes, create a cause and effect that make a prediction, a hypothesis, a response, and analysis to do it. So you want to actually, in all those three subsections, which are well published, well researched, and proven, that they're very solid. Those three things. So I'll repeat it again. That's think, pair, share. And then interleaved into that, it is predict, observe, and explain. So one is thinking abstract, one is actually reduction of the pool of abstract thought down to a single outcome. And this is one of the I suppose, important thing is that we often give them top marks for thinking abstractly, but it's the practical reduction to practice, as it's called, is sort of the downward spiral from that abstract thought, reducing it down. And so those are very solid views. And as promised, I said that I would give you sort of a little bit of a heads up about where this field stands, especially if you're from outside, you're a scientist coming from the outside. It's a surprising thing. You pick up a book written by someone, and there's no references, and there's no bibliography or description of alternative theories, and the data that's provided is from their own observation in class. They have a pet theory, they put it in a class, and so there's no wrestle with cognitive bias. Now, there's no necessary need to be cocky or superior, because science has had many years of experience to tackle these two things. The idea is that their ideas should be put into the context of all general learning. So, in particular, a lot of the theories are really written in a sort of a their own atmosphere, ecosystem. And, for instance, they're very structured-based and outcome-based, but they don't, address a lot of the literature, from activity theory or Vygotsky, or look at long-term, like the person may get an A in the test, but down the track, when faced with a problem in 20 years' time, they may not be able to access their learning or build on their learning. So that's the generalisation of it. The use of double-blind tests puts people in a pitch when someone says, "Look, it's especially in a book, books published by or pamphlets published by people who are awarded the Prime Minister's Prize for teaching, and they produce data saying, look, in my class, they got more." It's what you do. You can't really be offensive, it sounds as though that you're trying to defend yourself. It's just a very funny way of going ahead. Now, so just a signpost is that these two things that I've given you, we can extract from this sort of quagmire of different groups doing different things to different standards. We can extract those two things again, repeat once again. It's think, pair, share, predict, observe, explain, that they are the gold standard stuff. I'd like to close with a observation by René Descartes. René Descartes, a French philosopher, probably the foundation person who developed the science of philosophy, said that he thought that he wasn't happy with his education, and he was happy with the circular logic or the closed parochial nature of belief systems, and he said that education was a parody of reason. This is not me saying it, this is a famous person saying it, and his philosophy at the time, given that we don't have modern sciences still to evolve, was to develop the idea of a discipline of mind, discipline of the mind, a discipline of thinking. And on the basis of that, he began producing three laws of motion, various observations or theories based on basic logic, or the famous I think, therefore I am. So this progressed forward. Now, it's still a valid observation, and we have developed modern science. It's just the application of that. So that concludes this podcast. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, please keep on thinking and doing science.